This is The Guardian.
Hello and welcome to the Guardian Football Weekly, not a pod for those of you who desperately ask us not to talk about VAR and refereeing decisions. Mikel Arteta is embarrassed and feels sick to be a part of this. Arsenal send an official statement saying that everyone at the Emirates is also sick and embarrassed. Has he got a point, or is this just some classic deflecting? Would it be a better use of his time to tell David Raya where to stand when someone hoys it into the box? Anyway, Newcastle win a scrappy game, some result given their injuries. Elsewhere, Luton and Baz are oh so close, almost a wonderful upset, but you can't begrudge Luis Diaz saving the Reds from defeat. Ollie Norwood goes full pressman in injury time and Sheffield United win their first game. Is the real conspiracy against Gary O'Neill? There's Jeremy Doku giving Manchester City the extra attacking threat we all thought they needed. Forest upsetting Villa, Neil Mopay scoring and Manchester United just about winning. Also today, Emma Hayes says she's leaving Chelsea at the end of the season. There's some FA Cup first round heroics from Chesterfield, amongst others. The Copa Libertadores, more Gary Birtle's correspondence than we were expecting. Your questions, and that's today's Guardian Football Weekly. On the panel today, Jordan Jarrett, Brian, welcome.
Morning, mate.
Hello, Barry Glendenning.
Hello, Max Rushton.
And hello, Jonathan Wilson.
Morning, how you doing?
Very good, thanks. Let's start then at St James's Park. Ian says, to aid Arteta and anyone else who can't work out basic things like perspective, should footballs be cubes instead of spheres? Personally, I'm against it. Keep up the good work. He says, lost in a supermarket, says, are we to label those that deny the curvature of the ball flat ballers? And can we expect a statement on their behalf from David Icke? Chris says, please don't spend a third of Monday's pod talking about refereeing decisions from Newcastle Arsenal. Please talk about the actual football. Please, honestly, referees are getting so much shit now, not just in an emotional post-match interviews, but in official club statements. Well done, Arsenal, that I wouldn't blame them if they just downed tools. I don't really disagree with that, Barry, but I also don't see how it's possible not to talk about the biggest moment of the weekend.
Yeah, and I'd love to talk about the football, but the football wasn't actually that good in this game. I think neither team played particularly well. A draw probably would have been fair. Newcastle probably consider themselves a bit lucky to have got the points, but I wouldn't begrudge them them. And the most entertaining parts of the game were that contentious refereeing decision, the goal being allowed, and the bad-tempered niggle during the game where we could have had, and probably should have had, two red cards. But yeah, you can't avoid the goal and Mikel Arteta's reaction, the club's, I think, embarrassing reaction, and the rage being felt by Arsenal fans, who would almost certainly be similarly angry if they had scored an identical goal and it was ruled out. And for what it's worth, was the ball out of play? We don't know. Was it a push in the back of Gabriel by Joe Linton? I think so, but it's a matter of opinion and mine doesn't count. And was Anthony Gordon offside? We don't know. So I'm not sure what all the fuss is about. And Arsenal then put out this club statement yesterday, which I read several times and find a little baffling. They purport to, you know, to be delighted to be in the best league in the world, a league they were only too happy to abandon with several other clubs and abandon and potentially ruin not so long ago when they wanted to form a Super League. So they're kind of talking out of both sides of their mouths. But I'm sure Arsenal fans will disagree with me completely, but that is my take on the matter.
Well, Jordan is an Arsenal fan. Should we start with the incidents then, Jordan? I think I agree with Barry on all of those. We don't know if the ball is out of play. Mm-hmm. It looks like it might be, but we can't see the right angle. We don't know about the offside. The foul is probably a foul.
I agree with Barry as well. I think Mikel Arteta's gone big and gone early on this one. I think his outrage post-match wasn't proportionate to actually what happened on the field of play. All three of the elements of which I think he's irate about, as Barry's explained, weren't conclusive. I'm not so sure it was definitely a foul. It probably was, but I don't think it was like a stinker. The offside is ridiculously close, and I don't know if the ball was out or not. So I don't understand why he's gone so hard so early. And the club statement as an Arsenal fan for me, I wouldn't say it was embarrassing, but it was a bit disappointing because, again, of all the things that you could issue a statement about, I just felt this really wasn't the one, this wasn't an incident to do that for. I mean, the Brentford goal last year, where they actually forgot to use the equipment to do their job, I feel like that's the time that you put out a club statement. So I just felt that his ire and his rage in that interview and press conference just wasn't proportionate to what actually happened on the field of play. And I think actually, if you look from a footballing perspective, the thing that I was most upset about was David Raya. The two things we were told that he was brilliant at was distribution and collecting crosses. And I think in recent games, distribution's been a bit shaky. And what from that cross, what's he doing? So I would love to defend Arsenal in this instance, but I just think they've gone too big too early for something I think they could have saved in their back pocket. I think what they should have done was, with the other 19 Premier League clubs, just all linked up and said, hang on a minute, we need change here now. As a collective, we're all not happy because we're all getting fucked over now, week by week. So why don't we all as a group come together and say, we as the Premier League, we want change, rather than this individual trying to get one up. And finally as well, he looks a bit silly because about 5 weeks ago, there was a similar incident that went for him. And he was quoted as saying, referees make mistakes. They're human beings. We need to work with them. Let's not lambast them. And now he's doing exactly what he said he wouldn't do.
Yeah, that was October the 6th, which I think was actually all the managers in press conferences after the Spurs-Liverpool incident, where he said they're trying to make the best decisions. We need to understand that mistakes happen. We all make mistakes, which is slightly different to embarrassing. It's an absolute disgrace. That's what it is, a disgrace. There's so much at stake. You cannot imagine the amount of messages we've had saying this cannot continue. It's embarrassing. I don't know how to feel. I don't want to be in the hands of these people. I'm wasting my time. We are wasting our time. I've been in this country more than 20 years. And it's nowhere near the level of the best league in the world. I feel sick to be a part of this. I feel sick. It's not a goal. It's not a goal. Is there a point, Wilson, in the fact that there is so much money in the Premier League that at Premier League grounds, we should have the technology to see if a ball is out of play and we should, whatever happens with an offside, be able to have some lines?
I think there's definitely a case for semi-automated offside. I don't really understand why that hasn't been brought in, quite apart from anything else, to speed up the process. But are we really saying that you're going to spend whatever it costs to have goal line technology for every line on the pitch? I mean, it's just nonsense. You know, just defend the cross. It's you know, say that ball had been a millimetre out. Do Arsenal deserve a point because of that? It's just ridiculous. Get on with it. I'd go harder than either Barry or Jordan. I'm pretty confident that ball's in play. I can't say 100%, but a gut instinct is it's in because you can see a tiny sliver of grass, but it's a tiny sliver. And yeah, we had the whole thing with the Japan goal in the World Cup, where we saw thousands of these TikTok videos of, I think it's the only thing I've watched on TikTok, of, showing a ball next to a line and then, you know, the camera above. But the idea that kind of, it all comes down to that one blade of grass. Yeah. What if Kai Havertz has been sent off as he should have been?
Yes.
It's yes. A far bigger issue.
Yes.
But Arsenal's lack of creativity, which is not just this game, has been a sort of recurring thing this season. I mean, Saka's had one shot in his last three games, I think. Mm. That's a much bigger issue than this marginal call, whether the ball's gone out or not. The problem is as well that since VAR came in, there's all this sort of conspiracy talk. Now, Arteta, I don't think he ever actually questioned the integrity of officiating. But there's no doubt that the tone of his comments whips up that hysteria, which is incredibly damaging for the integrity of the league. And again, it's not just Arsenal, it's the common thing across a lot of clubs. And it's just nonsense. You know, the refereeing is not good enough. What are you going to do? Where are you going to find better referees? I tell you what, why don't we slag off all the referees? Why don't we make their jobs really miserable? Why don't we say, yeah, you're awful, you're ruining football, I'm not going to talk to you ever again. So you demoralise this bunch, you break their confidence, and then, you know, if you're a 16-year-old who kind of thinks, yeah, I think I might be quite good at this being a referee, like, are you going to carry on and do that as a job? Of course you're not. It's, you know, how have the wells been poisoned? It comes from the whole, everybody in football.
Yeah. The Arsenal statement, which began, I really liked how it began, saying Arsenal Football Club wholeheartedly supports Mikel Arteta's post-match comments. It's like every club could just do that about every manager every time any manager says anything. After yet more unacceptable refereeing and VAR errors on Saturday evening, which factually isn't necessarily correct. We'd also like to acknowledge the huge effort and performance from our players and travelling supporters at St James's Park. Just a needless sentence. The Premier League is the best league in the world with the best players, coaches and supporters, all of whom deserve better. PGMOL urgently needs to address the standard of officiating and focus on action, which moves us all on from retrospective analysis, which just seems to be what you're doing now. Attempted explanations and apologies. We support the ongoing efforts of Chief Refereeing Officer Howard Webb and would welcome working together to achieve the world-class officiating standards our league demands. I mean, I agree with you, Barry. I don't see any point in this at all.
No, it's just a statement that's not saying anything. And it's inaccurate as well. But when it was posted on Twitter, you've got all these gooners going, my club, love heart. And, you know, they're fully supporting their club, fully supporting Arteta over this nonsense. And all it does is fuel conspiracy theories and add to the pile on referees who are already struggling to do a very difficult job. And in this particular instance, like in general, VAR is a mess. But in this particular incident, I'm not sure the ref did anything wrong or the officials did anything wrong.
Yeah, and the problem as well with this sort of culture we now have of blaming referees. Anthony Taylor, who we've now learned is one of the big two referees. We learned that last week, that he and Michael Oller are the big two. Which game did he do at the weekend? He did Preston v Coventry because he was being punished for giving Newcastle a penalty at Wolves the previous week. A decision that, you know, when you look at it from his angle, it looks like a penalty. If it's a failure at all, there is a failure. But the failure is VAR's failure. It's not his. And so we take one of our best two referees and we
literally send them to Coventry.
We literally send them to Preston to do a Coventry game.
All right. We send them to wherever Coventry are. Jordan, you wanted to come in and then...
Yeah, just briefly add as well that the fact that... I think, first of all, Wilson's correct to mention the fact that the thing that Arteta didn't mention conveniently was the blatant Havertz red card. I mean, it was a debate of the weekend. I'm like, how is that even a debate? It's a clean red card. But also, if you're going to go crazy in that post-match press conference, do it over the forearm that Guimaraes did towards to Jorginho. That's what you should be going crazy about. I've got a theory about what we as the media and fans do bashing referees every single week. I would like it for 4 weekends. If we just, nobody spoke about referees, just banned it for 4 weeks. And if we saw if it had an improvement on referees, I've just got this really weird theory that we're contributing to the standard dropping of referees by every single week scrutinizing. Even if it was a bad call, we don't talk about it on TalkSport, on Sky Sports, on Match of the Day, on the Guardian Football Weekly. We just don't mention them and see if there's an uptake or upturn in the standard of refereeing. So I think there would be.
Can I just say, though, if we are going to do that, we can't tell referees because otherwise...
Like... just hope that they're not all glued.
There'll be a lot of scores being settled in that 4 weeks. Yeah.
Anyway, I mean, I think you've all sort of touched on it as well. And I think, Barry, that thing about David Raya is really interesting. That feels like the third goal, right? There was Mudryk against Chelsea. There was the Tottenham goal where there was a bit more football after he was in the wrong place for a cross, flapped at it, and then it came back out and Son eventually scored. And that is a big problem for someone you've brought in as opposed to your number one. Like, that's, I don't know how many points, 6 points, 1 point, like 5 points. I don't know how many points. I haven't worked it out. But when you're trying to win the title, it's a big issue.
It is a problem for Arteta because Raya seems to be very much his signing. He wanted Raya for a long time and people were puzzled as to what Aaron Ramsdale had done wrong when he was brought... Raya was brought in and then replaced him. And Raya hasn't covered himself in glory, but it will be difficult for Mikel Arteta to drop him without losing a huge amount of face because he's backed him so strongly. We talk about officials making mistakes, you know, when that goal was scored, Ben White made a mistake, Gabriel made a mistake, David Raya made a mistake. His was the most egregious error of anyone's. And it is turning into a problem for Arteta, as many predicted it might.
I suppose they could drop David Raya, and then before kickoff, Arsenal could release a statement saying they agree with Mikel Arteta's decision to drop David Raya. Look, Newcastle were good in this game. I agree with Barry, actually, Wilson, that neither team was great, but given that the injuries that Newcastle have and that sort of fatigue that we thought they had after the Dortmund game and the Wolves game, they really were at it, I thought, in this game.
Yeah, they were. I mean, they doubled up on Saka Martinelli, who had very little impact on the game. But just a general sort of aggression and work rate, getting men behind the ball. Yeah, they were hugely impressive. I think even without the caveat about the injuries, I just sort of think the way Eddie Howe wants to play, he seems quite happy against bigger sides or the top sort of five or six to play that quite reactive football. And it worked really well. So I think you have to give him a lot of credit for that. And I think from an Arsenal point of view, that Saka looks tired, and I think that's a big worry for them.
Mm. I mean, it is the first defeat in the league this season. It's the first game in all competitions where they haven't scored. So it's not a crisis yet, is it? To Kenilworth Road, Barry. Luton 1, Liverpool 1. George says, as Barry correctly predicted that Liverpool would struggle at Kenilworth Road, should we be referring to him as the greatest footballing mind since Sam Allardyce? Or that octopus that predicted Spain winning the 2010 World Cup? Does Bastradamus have next week's lottery numbers asked? It's interesting. Producer Silas was saying during this game, I think everyone watching this game who listens to the pod was just thinking of you, Barry, as when Luton took the lead and when we thought, oh, they might hang on.
Yeah, I think if they had hung on, I might have had to announce my retirement today because it would have been my Sistine Chapel regarding predictions. But, stop clocks and blind squirrels, etc. It was a brilliant performance by Luton. The match could have got away for them, but for the wayward finishing of Liverpool in general and Darwin Nunez in particular. But Luton stayed in the game. They posed Liverpool problems before they scored. They weren't just sitting back and parking the bus. They were really good on the counter. Ross Barkley, one of the best performances I've ever seen him put in. Issa Kabore, Chidozie Ogbene, and our Andros Townsend Senior, as he is now, which I wonder what that makes Troy, super geriatric old man. But yeah, a brilliant performance by Luton. Their goal, their counter attack goal, was classic counter attack goal. Couldn't have gone better. And it's kind of a shame they couldn't hang on. But I don't think anyone's going to begrudge Luis Diaz that equaliser, given the stress he must be under. And both sides will probably be disappointed with the result. But I really wanted Luton to hang on.
Hmm. The goal was Liverpool's 24th attempt in the game. But the first 23, Wilson, were all missed by Darwin Nunez. he's amazing, isn't he? That goal he scored in the Carabao Cup was brilliant. He's capable of brilliance. That volley where the control for the volley that hits the bar is amazing. And then the volley miss sitter is ludicrous.
Yeah, that volley miss sitter, I think he was offside for anyway, wasn't he? But yeah, he's just a fascinating player to watch because he's capable of brilliance and he's capable of being brilliantly awful in the space of 15 seconds. And that's great. It makes him a lot of fun. Does it make him a title-winning centre-forward? Well, maybe not. But yeah, he got them the points at Newcastle earlier this season. You know what he brings, and well, you know what he brings, as in you have no idea what he brings, but you know that you don't know what he brings, as Donald Rumsfeld once said. He's much better when he doesn't have time, when it's instinctive. Yeah, I think he's a great volleyer of the ball. He did miss that volley, but yeah, he's just a fascinating footballer. And you sort of wonder which way it'll go, whether he degenerates into never scoring any of those, or whether he irons out the mistakes and becomes a 30-goal a season man. Or maybe he just keeps on going, being this weird bundle of contradictions and gets 20 in the season and half the fans think he's brilliant, half the fans think he's terrible. And both are right.
Yes, and but it doesn't seem to faze him, missing chances, which is sort of lucky, I think, for him. Look, the thing here for Liverpool, Jordan, is if you want to win the title, you can't drop points at Luton.
No, that is very, very true. And they came very close to that. I thought in this game. We all know it already, but Alexander-Arnold, some of his deliveries and passes in that first half were just insane. He was just stroking the ball around. You know, some of these crosses that were just a joy to watch. I don't know how Nunes missed that open goal. Like, if some open goal misses where you're like, I can kind of see how you missed that one, but I don't know how he managed to not hit the target from where he was. But yeah, the Diaz got the end. It was also a very good header, because it's not an easy header to do. He's got to loop it and stoop a little bit, and they will take their point and run. I think from a Luton perspective, I think we all wanted them to win that game, but I just fear that they will look back in a few weeks' time and thought, if we just hung on, although they'll be like, yeah, it's a point against Liverpool, played well. I think when they wake up today, they'll be thinking, we had to hang on for six more minutes or whatever it was. We could regret that.
I mean, on Luis Diaz, football is a great escape for lots of people, and Lord only knows what he is going through and how he is feeling, and maybe playing and being in a dressing room is exactly what he needs in this difficult time. He had a T-shirt on underneath that said Libertad para Papa, freedom for Dad, as his dad is still being held hostage back in Colombia. And of course, we send our best wishes to Luis Diaz. Before part two, let's do Sheffield United's first win of the season then over Wolves. Ollie Norwood's penalty, Baz. Absolutely. I mean, it's rare that a penalty can give you so much joy, but that was amazing.
Yeah, he fairly whacked it all right, as you said at the intro, Pressman-esque. And that's a big, big win for Sheffield United against a weird Wolves team who've beaten City, drawn with Villa, Newcastle, drawn with Luton, and now drawn with Sheffield United. So you never really know what you're going to get with Wolves. I think they can once again, and certainly not for the first, second or third time this season, consider themselves unfortunate, because I don't think Fabio Silva's challenge on George Baldock was a foul. He pulled out of it. And so Sheffield United were lucky to get the penalty. They're probably due a bit of luck. And I thought at first Ollie Norwood was going to blast it out of Bramall Lane, but yeah, it found the top corner. So
the net held on. The net just about held on, didn't it? Simon says, as a Bournemouth fan, I was getting very paranoid last season because every VAR decision seemed to go against us. Not a single penalty was given to us either. Now I realise the vendetta was actually against our manager, Gary O'Neill. And it seems to be getting more obvious every week. Gary O'Neill said he sat in the referee's room looking at the incident with the ref, repeatedly disagreeing about whether it was a foul or not, which is a scene in a sitcom I'd like to see, Wilson. Someone going, there, it's a foul. No, it isn't. Yes, it is. No, it isn't. And he did say last week he wasn't going to talk to refs anymore. So he went against that. But he's really unlucky. You know, two centre-forwards giving away penalties that aren't penalties late on to cost them points.
Yeah, I don't really know how a ref can look at a video of that. I can see why a ref would give it in real time. I get that. Although I think even then, given Baldock's reaction, yeah, Baldock doesn't appeal at all. Yeah, I mean, I think, was it Danny Murphy on Match of the Day suggesting he dived? It's not a dive. He just puts his foot in the, you know, behind the ball and then slightly loses his footing as a little bit of pressure behind him. And yeah, but he's not appealing at all. He's back on his feet and trying to turn. I mean, it's just not a foul, is it? So I don't know how you can look at the video of that and say it is. I think that's very concerning.
Mm. But Cameron Archer's goal, as Seb says, is that the most satisfying goal in football? Something wonderful about a ball smashing into the underside of the crossbar, bouncing back up into the roof of the net. Of course, I would say Tony Yeboah. I don't know, Wilson, if you have any advances on who is the go-to off the bar, bouncing down, bouncing up again.
Yeah, well, Yeboah against Wimbledon. Do you mean the Wimbledon one or the Liverpool one?
No, I think Liverpool is the off the bar.
Oh, I think I prefer... No, the Wimbledon one's off the bar as well.
They both...
It's not a volley.
They're both
both off the bar, yeah. I think I prefer the Wimbledon one. The problem is the net at Selhurst Park. It's a bad net.
Yeah. Whereas so the Elland Road net is a great net.
Yeah.
At that time.
No, I'd go Yeboah at Wimbledon.
Hamas Rodriguez, producer Sider says in the World Cup.
Did I hit the bar? I was at that game. I saw it live, but I don't.
It did. Sider has just checked. Breaking news. No, that's what he does. Okay.
I can
YouTube.
Confirm as well. It definitely did.
Well, Lewis Dunk had one that was disallowed this weekend as well, didn't he? A volley off the crossbar. That was nice.
Darren Anderton, that was also Elland Road, wasn't it? Against Sweden. Did it hit both posts on the bar?
Yeah, both posts. I don't think it hit the bar.
I was at a Sunderland game against Fulham at Craven Cottage where Kieran Richardson hit both posts on the crossbar with a free kick.
That was great, yeah. Anyway, that'll do for part one. Well done, Sheffield United. Part two will begin at the Etihad. Hi, Pod fans. Football Weekly is supported by FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted to League Two after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher league. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenge and rise again into League One? FX's Welcome to Wrexham, all new Thursdays on FX. Stream on Hulu. Welcome to part two of the Guardian Football Weekly. Charlie says, if you go the whole episode without mentioning VAR, I'll buy a live show ticket, then get drunk and buy another one. Look, a week today, we're playing the Troxy in London. There are some tickets available. Go to theguardian.com/FWTour23. It's very easy to get to, just in case you haven't heard of it, and that is what's stopping you. Come along. Me, Ellis, Troy, Philippe and Baz, and then a few tickets still available in Manchester on Wednesday the 15th. Me, Baz, John Bruin, Nader Manuaha, and the Will and Win Anecdote, both Jordan's gig in Bristol and Wilson's, both of them in Dublin, are sold out. But the live stream on the 22nd with Johnny Lou and Nicky Bandini is obviously not sold out. It will never sell out. Not a possibility. So come along, watch it from wherever you are in the world.
I was at the socially distant sports bar live in the Clapham Grand on Saturday, and Ellis, for reasons I won't explain, took his shirt off. He's incredibly hench and buff and ripped. Yeah, it's amazing. So
I didn't have him down. I had him down as a bit of a weed.
Yeah, me too. I was astonished and slightly upset because I'm not astonishingly buff, hench and ripped. But if you buy a ticket for Monday, we will get Ellis to take his shirt off.
I don't. We're not that kind of... Well, I mean, I guess if it sells some tickets, absolutely fine. So the Etihad, Manchester City, I just don't know if that is going to get people to come, is it? Ellis James topless?
And does he know?
No, he doesn't. I was just astonished with what I saw because I really wasn't expecting it. Six-pack, the works.
Wow. God, yeah. That takes a lot of effort. In many ways, I've judged him a little bit. If I told you about the mentality I have.
Yes, you have.
Andrew says, was Guardiola right? Were Bournemouth so, so good? Yeah, another one of how brave. Those brave boys opening up and letting us play through them. Man City 6, Bournemouth 1. The Jeremy Doku show, Jordan. 4 assists and a goal. Bit of a letdown. He wasn't involved in the sixth, really.
Yeah, no, he's this was the Doku show. He's looking like he's going to be a top Premier League player. Very exciting as well. I feel like he's going to be a lot of fun. I feel like he's channeling the inner Okocha. He's got a similar body type, really quick feet. He's got a quick shot off the bat.
Didn't Okocha play at sort of like 2 miles an hour? And it feels like Doku plays at 100 miles an hour. I mean, maybe I'm misremembering JJ.
No, that's fair. But I think the similarity is one, I think they've got the body type is similar, but also he can go from static to just like 100 miles an hour in like 0.4 seconds. And I think Okocha had that kind of ability to kind of go from nothing to burst as well. He was dominant. He was definitely in the mood. But I think the best goal of the whole weekend was Bernardo Silva's goal. I think it was the fifth goal. I loved his goal. He kind of just glided through a couple of players and just like kind of dinked it past the goalkeeper. So, I mean, this was always going to be a battering for Bournemouth. And indeed, that's how it ended up.
What takes away from the Bernardo Silva goal is that someone hooked it off the line. So they had to wait. Like for the beauty of a dink, you have to see it hit the back of the net, I think. I mean, that was set up by Doku as well. One of 7 players... joining 7 other players to get 4 assists in a game. 4 Arsenal players, 2 Tottenham and 1 Man United. Would anybody like a guess in this quiz?
Henry.
Ozil.
No. No. Oh.
Fabregas.
Yes. Bergkamp, Reyes, Fabregas, Cazorla are the Arsenals. The Tottenhams are Harry Kane and Emmanuel Adebayor. and Paul Pogba for Man United. Man City have won 22 consecutive home games in all competitions, the highest longest run in history by an English top flight side. Behind who, Wilson?
Sunderland had a very good home record in the 1890s.
Yes, there you go. Sunderland, a 24-game streak from Sunderland between December 1890 and April 1892. I'm delighted that you got that right.
I don't want to diminish that record, but Sunderland was a fucking long way in the 1890s.
That's fair enough. Erling Haaland went off at half-time, but you know it wasn't a problem. How worried about Bournemouth are you, Baz?
Personally, I'm not. Couldn't care less because... but if I was a Bournemouth fan, I would be very worried. I mean, not many teams have a good record against Man City, but Bournemouth get absolutely trashed by them on a regular basis. Going back to the days of Eddie Howe, I read somewhere the average aggregate score over 13 or 14 games is something like 44-7. So it's no surprise they got tonked. And I'd be interested to know what Jack Grealish made of that game, because Jeremy Doku... obviously, and he are in the same position. And Taku's looking like he might make it his own. And Jack, through no fault of his own, could find himself spending quite a lot of time on the bench. But obviously, they will have a lot of games to play, so he will get game time.
But I think that's actually a really serious point about Grealish, that Grealish was never allowed at City to do what Doku's doing. As soon as he arrived, Guardiola had him, just sort of began reprogramming him into somebody who gave him control. And I think Grealish must be looking at Doku thinking, hang on, why is he not being reprogrammed? Why did I have to dismantle my game and start again? And maybe that will happen. I think it's telling that in the Manchester derby, it was Grealish who started, not Doku. And if you look at the stats, teams attack City down the City left much more this season than they did last season. And I think that's because Doku doesn't protect his fullback in the way that Grealish does.
I like the dystopian movie of the reprogramming of Jack Grealish while Jeremy Doku is just sort of running free. Anyway, to the City ground, Forest 2, Villa 0. Villa could have gone third if they'd won this game. And actually, my favourite goal of the weekend, Barry, was Forest's opener. From Ola Aina. I mean, it was just such a brilliant, a lovely move. It did slow down a bit, but that finish is so perfect.
Yeah, Harry Toffolo with one of two pullbacks to set up goals, and Aina just beautifully plays side foot into the corner, and he's not a regular goal scorer. I think that's his first for Forest. I wouldn't have it as my favourite of the weekend, but it was certainly a good strike.
Mm. And were you impressed with Forest?
Oh, very, yes. Aston Villa's home form we know is great, but they barely laid a glove on Forest yesterday. Ollie Watkins was kept very quiet, and Forest they sat quite deep. They didn't give Aston Villa any room to work in, and I thought Villa were uncharacteristically slow and ponderous, and I think it was pointed out in Match of the Day that really high defensive line they were playing, that they got caught out a few times, noticeably for the second goal. And it was just a bad day at the office for them. I think, you know, not enough players stepped up and performed, but I wouldn't worry too much about it.
And if you win best goalkeeper in the world, Jordan, not you personally, but Emi Martinez, it's not the weekend to do that.
No.
It's a really bad bit of goalkeeping, that, isn't it?
I don't know what he did. I don't know what part of his hand, the ball was touched to kind of go up and then get the backspin it got to then go in the goal. So it was bizarre. And yeah, the timing was comical, but not ideal for him.
Declan says, am I the only one who feels compelled to say "and Pliers" every time Odysseus Vlachodimos' name is mentioned, the Forest keeper? Also delighted that of the people on the Zoom call, Jonathan Wilson absolutely have no idea.
Well, all I know about this is John Bruin made the same joke yesterday and I didn't understand it then either.
Anyway, really, really important win for Forest, that. Also good win for Brentford, Wilson, 3-2 over West Ham. Jamie says, time for some respect on Neil Mopé's name after his goal on Saturday. Popular figure of fun. For those that love much repeated stats, reality is his link-up play has been a big part of Brentford's three wins in a row. Now he's got his goal to add to his two assists. He would have had a goal against Burnley too, but for a dubious offside call. Sorry it didn't work out from Everton, but he looks delighted to be playing for us. We're happy to have him back. Fully expect us to take up the option to buy if it is not prohibitive.
I mean, that's a slightly generous interpretation of the 15 minutes he played at Chelsea, having come off the bench. But I mean, look, the broader point is correct. He looks a different player back at Brentford. And, you know, he did have a season at Brentford. I mean, okay, in the Championship where he got, was it 20, 25 goals, I think? So he's obviously happy there. Footballers like that, who they're clearly not as bad as the stat that's repeated makes them look, or even as their naked panic every time they get a chance makes them look. So it's nice to see him back somewhere where he feels comfortable playing proper football again. And Brentford, you know, 3 games ago, we were sort of thinking, oh, you know, is the Ivan Toney issue going to affect them? Could they have run out of a bit of steam? And suddenly they've won 3 in a row and they're fine again. So from the highlights, this looked a really, really good game. Very much enjoyed the highlights. There was a great moment on Soccer Saturday when it was pointed out to Paul Merson was doing games, pointed out to Paul Merson that Mope hadn't scored since 2019. He went, well, I scored in 2018.
I love Paul Merson. Look, fine margin this game. Kudus' goal is brilliant, Barry, but that Antonio miss is something else.
Yeah, I would say the Kudus goal was probably my favourite of the weekend. But we criticised Darwin Núñez for his miss at Luton, but I think the Benrahma Antonio miss, collective miss, was worse. I would point my big finger of blame at Mikel Antonio. Antonio, the ball was heading straight for Benrahma and he kind of took it off his toe.
I think even including Benrahma in the miss is slightly unfair. He was just there ready to sweep it home. He had nothing to do with it.
Yeah. And then Mikel Antonio's fury afterwards, as if to suggest, yeah, what are you doing?
Yeah.
When it was all his fault. I liked that. But this was a really entertaining game. But West Ham's defending was absolutely abysmal. David Moyes called it Keystone Cops defending afterwards, and I think that's putting it kindly. Brilliant header by Nathan Collins, but you know, he's completely unmarked and towers above two defenders to nod home or thump the ball home.
Yeah, we did have a tweet about this, and I think Ian Danter, the Talksport our colleague, said it as well. We need a more modern reference than Keystone Cops. Even I don't know what Keystone Cops is. I know what Keystone Cops defending is, but I don't think I've ever seen Keystone Cops.
I used to be on Mark Curry's Movie Club on a Saturday morning in the 80s. That's where I know it from. That was great. You got like the Lone Ranger. I'd have a bar Highland Toffee and watch that. I think it's probably the last time I was truly happy. I was just looking it up, and hang on, in 1935 director Ralph Staub staged a revival of the Keystone Cops.
So he brought it back.
It appears that 1915 was the last one.
Wow.
I mean, surely even David Moyes isn't old enough to have seen that at the cinema.
Not sure this is helping with modern references for Keystone Cops defending. Anyway, do let us know. footballweekly@theguardian.com. A game that wasn't that exciting was Fulham Man United. I mean, they got away with it again, Jordan United, didn't they? Fernandes is great for the goal. Fulham's defending isn't. But it was a very early Saturday kickoff. No one was really ready.
No, I think you're right. I don't really have any massive takeaways from this game, apart from rival fans were actually of United were actually glad that they won, because the rationale being it keeps him there just a little bit longer, because had he lost this match, he would have been teetering on the brink, surely, of being fired. They weren't great. They got the win, but we know there's deeper rooted issues there at United than just getting 3 points on the weekend.
One of the things that people always talk about when managers are coming under pressure is, are the squad still fighting for him? And you look at United's last 6 games, 4 of them, they've won in the last minute, which suggests the squad is still fighting. The other 2, they've been totally pathetic and there's been no sign of fight whatsoever. So I don't know, is the answer. Like, are they still fighting for him? You know, it's...
Harry Maguire is, I mean, he got a lot of knocks. I don't know if you want to get on your high horse, Barry. Sort of feel like he could have been concussed at some point during this game. I'm not really sure. But also that led him to playing a sort of Glenn Hoddle-esque 60-yard pinpoint passes.
Well, it's kind of like that old story about some Partick Thistle midfielder who got a bang on the head and the physio shouts to the manager, he doesn't know who he is, and the manager shouts, well, tell him he's Pele. So, you know, Harry got the bang on the head. It didn't look great now, and he was clearly in distress for quite a long time, or at various other point, at least one other point in the game. So, yeah, I think he probably should have been withdrawn, but he wasn't, and clearly, if he had forgotten who he was, the physio told him he was Franz Beckenbauer, I think. But it was a brilliant performance for him. And there seems to be this Harry Maguire redemption arc in process. And I, for one, think that's probably a good thing, because he has been very unfairly maligned, in my opinion.
Yeah, it's just less of an arc, more a redemption long diag, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
We haven't discussed
redemption. Yeah.
We haven't mentioned Marcus Rashford being castigated for having a birthday party, having the temerity to celebrate his birthday after the defeat to Man City. Even Erik ten Hag said it was a bad idea. I must confess, I followed the story so little, I don't even know where he was. But you know,
I believe he was out at a nightclub and
China Whites.
Obviously, he should have been at home wrapping himself in barbed wire and hitting himself with a big stick, because you're not allowed to go out after a defeat. Can't be seen in public. Sackcloth and ashes time. You know, it's just performative nonsense.
Yeah, you can't smile for 5 days. China Whites, you say, Jordan, was it?
It was, yeah. He was celebrating his Baratini's birthday. I think the whole bashing, there was a back and forth between Clinton Morrison and Paul Merson on this on the weekend. And the general consensus of everyone apart from Morrison was saying that he shouldn't be out, he's got to stay in, you cancel it. I think Neville kind of added to that as well over the weekend. I just think it's nonsense. I just think it's his birthday, he's got to live his life. Or this idea that football players can't smile because they've lost a Manchester Derby game. How long does that last for? Is it 4 days he can't smile? Is it a week he can't smile? Is it a month?
Can you smile to your children when you come home? That's the question.
It's just so dumb.
Hi, Dada.
It's so dumb.
Yeah. I did go to China Whites once. And Robert Huth was there. With Liam Lawrence and Robert Huth and one of the Keos. Can't remember which one, but they weren't in kit, so I couldn't tell you which of the Keos. Palace won 2-0 at Burnley. Ian says, given Burnley's recent results, can the panel advise if Vincent is now officially a limited company? Which is a nice question, isn't it? 6 successive home defeats for Burnley. It's funny, isn't it? Like, I think people have stopped saying, oh, they'll be fine, Barry, haven't they?
I certainly have. My concern for them here is, you know, they're still making mistakes. But I wasn't even particularly impressed with Palace, but they still won quite comfortably. I don't think they played well at all. So that is a major concern for Burnley. The only thing I'd say in their favour is they battered Palace in almost every stat, and they were creating chances but just couldn't score any of them. But to lose at home to a Palace side that's missing a key player and that didn't play well, that is not a good sign.
No. Finally, Everton won, Brighton won. Everton have gone really dicey, Jordan, and I'm all here for it.
My only note on this game, Max, is that Lewis Dunk seems to have turned into Prime Maldini, hitting volleys off crossbars. And Dunk taking free kicks as well. I don't know what's happened to Dunk at Brighton, but he seems to have really evolved into more than just your kind of League Two, I can head it out the box type centre back, and I'm liking
it. Yeah, no, he's a brilliant
footballer. I think Dunk's always had a free kick in him.
Am I being harsh? Is that unfair?
I think you are, yeah, just because he's tall and called Dunk. I think you think it's sort of onomatopoeic that he would just but he's, yeah, I think he's always been quite a cultured centre back. Meanwhile, as I was trying to get John to talk about, but he's talking about Lewis Dunk. Wilson, Sean Dyche has got Everton being Dyche.
Yeah, I mean, they've gone back to it's not quite a 4-4-2, is it? That Doucouré does play slightly off Calvert-Lewin. But I mean, Calvert-Lewin being fit is a huge thing. I don't know if Dyche takes some credit for that. I know he did a lot of work sort of analysing Calvert-Lewin's lifestyle to work out. I mean, I think he did things like looking at his car, whether it was something to do with, you know, the way he pressed the accelerator that was causing injuries. I thought you really went through what was causing all the problems. But they look like what a Dyche side should look like now. Probably still slightly more open than he'd like, but I don't think we're thinking of Everton as relegation candidates now. So you've got to give Dyche credit for that.
I love this image of Dominic Calvert-Lewin being ruled out because he strained his calf while overtaking someone on the M6.
I just had this image of Sean Dyche saying, "I'm going to come round and see what you're driving." And Dominic Calvert-Lewin is in like a tiny clown car or like on one of those tiny little bicycles with his knees up around his ears going, "Oh, maybe this is the problem." Anyway, that'll do for part two. We'll do the FA Cup, Copa Libertadores, a bit on Emma Hayes as well in part three. Welcome to part three of the Guardian Football Weekly. Mainz have terminated Anwar El Ghazi's contract following the forward's social media posts in connection with the Israel-Hamas conflict. He was suspended in October following an earlier comment, had been cleared to return to training on Monday after showing remorse. However, he posted a new statement on Wednesday that the German club said was incomprehensible. They would examine it from a legal perspective. "My position remains the same as it was when this started," El Ghazi wrote. "I'm against war and violence. I'm against the killing of all innocent civilians. I'm against all forms of discrimination. I'm against Islamophobia. I'm against anti-Semitism. I'm against genocide. I'm against apartheid. I'm against occupation. I'm against oppression." His post said, "Stand for what is right, even if it means standing alone. The loss of my livelihood is nothing when compared to the hell being unleashed on the innocent and vulnerable in Gaza. Hashtag stop the killing." Archie is on the pod on Thursday, so we're going to talk about that story then. Fred says, "Could Chelsea's announcement about Emma Hayes derail their incredible train of success?" Yeah, the Chelsea manager is going to leave at the end of the season. It looks very likely she's going to become the head of the United States women's national team. Over 12 years, she's led her team to 6 WSL titles, 5 FA Cups, 2 Continental Cups, the Spring Series Community Shield, Champions League final, got an MBE and an OBE, has been named best FIFA women's football coach in 2021 and WSL manager of the season on 6 occasions. It's big for the WSL, this, Baz, isn't it?
Yeah, I wouldn't necessarily say it could derail their season, Chelsea season, the news of her imminent departure. But if anything, it could galvanise them and see them go on, an already brilliant team, go on to greater things. I think she'd be a huge loss to the WSL, just the English football landscape in general. She's, you know, a very clever woman. She's very sensible, she's interesting to listen to, no matter what she's talking about, whether it's the women's game, the men's game, if she's doing co-coms or working as a pundit. She's helped advance the women's game in this country, and she will be sorely missed, I suspect. I would love to go for a night out on the beer with Emma Hayes. I suspect she would be tremendous company.
Yeah, I mean, we've interviewed her a few times on the radio when, you know, before a big final, saying, "Look, if you win tomorrow, where will you be?" And she'd be like, "I'll just be on a park bench somewhere." So her general response. But yeah, good luck to her. Of course, the Guardian Women's Football Weekly will cover that in great detail. In the FA Cup first round, Chesterfield knocked out Portsmouth, who were unbeaten in League One this season, top of League One. 8th tier Craig Valley Paper Mills FC, Craig Valley PM equalised to set up a replay at home to, it says here, producer Joel's Charlton. I'm not sure that's how many people know them. And it was an own goal, but it was forced over the line by Kyrell Lisby, son of Kevin Lisby. If Kevin Lisby is old enough to have children who are old enough to be semi-professional footballers, it's a worrying sign of how old we all are. In my mind, Kevin Lisby is about 16. And John says, "I know it's niche, but a word on the 563 Horsham fans travelling from Sussex to Barnsley for a Friday night non-televised FA Cup first round game, getting a draw. The Lardy Army had a lovely time. So yeah, well done if your team got through. We smashed Bracknell 2-1. It was quite nerve-wracking. You know who you have in the second round draw. And let's talk about the Copa Libertadores. Lee says, Fluminense won the Libertadores thanks to a winner from a Brazilian with surely the least Brazilian name ever, John Kennedy. Is this a nickname like Pele, or is there something else to do with it? Can any of you shed some light? Wilson?
I think his parents just like John Kennedy. But they do this quite a lot in Brazil, don't they? They name kids after sort of famous people from elsewhere.
And producer Silas says, Cristiano Ronaldo is named after Ronald Reagan, which I did not believe, but is apparently true.
Well, it's true, Nixon McLean, the West Indies fast bowler, is named after Nixon, the president. But yeah, it was a really brutal game. So Fluminense, they've got this coach, Ginis, who's supposedly sort of reinventing football, playing, it's a form of possession football, but he calls it relationism rather than positionalism. So whereas Guardiola likes his players to sort of always be conscious of where they need to be to counter a counter, this is much more free-flowing. It often just looks like people crowding around the ball because he wants people close to the ball to give passing options. To be honest, it was pretty hard to see that in this game because it was such a sort of tense and at times violent game. Germán Cano put Fluminense ahead 9 minutes before half-time with a really nice goal. And then Fluminense, slightly disappointingly, just sort of sat back on it. And Boca had much better second half. Advíncula, the right back, equalised 18 minutes to go. And you sort of thought then the momentum was with Boca. And then Kennedy came off the bench, scored an absolutely brilliant winner. Ball just knocked down to the edge of the box and he smashes it first time in the bottom corner. And he then goes off on this celebratory run that just takes him sort of, you know, deep, deep, deep into the stand, for which he gets a second booking. So he's sent off. But then 7 minutes into injury time, at the end of the first half of extra time, Boca have a player sent off, Frank Fabra, for slapping Nino. Like, just really stupid. You know, cost Boca the man advantage. And from then on, Boca didn't really offer much. So a lot of sort of pointless long-range shots from the border, and that was it. And Fluminense 1-2-1 for their first ever Libertadores title. So congratulations to them.
Yeah, and Marcelo becoming the 14th player to have won the Champions League and the Copa Libertadores. Anyway, Harry Kane scored a hat-trick in the Clásica. As I said, Archie's on Thursday. On halfway line goals, Michael says, the divider between a halfway line goal being a great goal or a goalkeeper howler just has to be whether the ball bounces. The pleasure of one of these is it's lofted over the keeper. If it bounces, it's proved the keeper should have got it. So credit to Beckham. And I was saying his halfway line goal gets more credit than others. His was in a good spot. But while Alonso may be a great manager, neither of his halfway line goals are great goals. In other news, the former Chelsea assistant, Henk ten Cater, has rejected an Ajax job to star in a Dutch detective show. I mean, nothing has been in Wilson's wheelhouse more than former people rejecting Total Football to go and be a detective in a TV programme.
Well, I noticed Barry's auditioned for the Schliepers, as I believe it's called, this show.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm desperate to see it. A man was former Chelsea assistant, former Barcelona assistant. So he's won league titles in England, he's won league titles in Spain, he's won Champions Leagues. And now he's playing a detective in a crime drama. It's like, what a life, what a career.
And it's just great to have those two options going, I just don't know which job am I going to take? Assistant at Ajax or, I mean, I would absolutely take Dutch detective. Who will play the chief inspector in the series Sleepers for Videoland, 10 episodes. How great is that? Yeah, good luck to him.
I mean, I really hope we can watch it on British TV. I mean, I'm desperate to see it.
It's a bit like when watching The English Patient. I think I went to the cinema with my wife. Frank LaBeouf appears just as like a doctor. So obviously like half the cinema are just like, what's Frank LaBeouf doing there? And the other half are like...
Sorry, Max, you hadn't met your wife when The English Patient was in the cinema.
Also, Frank LaBeouf was very... Frank LaBeouf hadn't even won the World Cup by the time The English Patient... The English Patient came out like 1993 or something, didn't it?
What do I mean? I don't mean The English Patient. No. What do I mean?
The football link of English Patient is that Kevin Whateley plays Hardy, the bomb disposal expert. And there will be a spoiler here, so skip the next 30 seconds if you haven't seen it. But when they're going through his effects, there's a Sunderland scarf in there. which is because he's a Newcastle fan, and the crew put a Sunderland scarf in just as a prank on him. But the badge on the scarf was only introduced in 1976. That's it. That's in the Football Weekly book, which is still available, apparently.
And that is the only interesting thing that happens in the English page. It's a terrible film.
Oh, I think it's a good film. I like it.
The Theory of Everything. The Theory of Everything was the movie that I got muddled up. Anyway, at the time, you know, he was a doctor, there was a patient. You know, that's where the confusion came. After I got Wallander and Van der Volk knocked, you know.
I heard that live and I said, oh God, what's he done? What? Oh,
yeah,
dear.
Absolute disgrace, isn't it? Well done to Arsenal under-18s, who couldn't play their game away to Brighton because the team bus travelled to Bournemouth instead of Brighton, which yesterday on the radio, Barry and I did the text topic, when have you gone to Bournemouth by accident? And it turns out a lot of people have, more than you would imagine. Duff says, the depiction of Fabio Capello in the play Dear England bears an uncanny and unsettling resemblance to Barry in a wig doing an Italian accent. Let's not get Barry on an Italian accent. Oh, God. What a mistake at a maker. It'll be one of those, won't it? And here we are, finished the pod with Gary Birtles. Rob says, hi, huge fan. I've been listening to you guys since the interim, a.k.a. Matt, started hosting. Thanks, Rob. After listening to your most recent podcast, I couldn't help but message you guys. I'm Gary Birtle's window cleaner. He's a top bloke and regularly makes me an oat milk. He doesn't drink cow's milk coffee each time I'm at his house and lets me use his loo. Surely everyone lets the window cleaner use the loo, don't they? I keep his price cheap. With being a big Nottingham Forest fan, I have to charge him as my work partner is a Derby County fan and won't agree to giving Gary a free clean each month. Next time I see him, I'll ask him about his £200 purchase of his Guns N' Roses record. I'm still hoping one day he invites me out with the Forest Legends and Sean Dyche for brunch. Well, good luck, Rob. Meanwhile, Dan says, hi, Max, Barry and team. I live in Long Eaton, Derbyshire, the home of Long Eaton United, the team that Nottingham Forest famously signed the carpet fitter Gary Birtles from. I live on the main road and often see a bloke who looks like Gary Birtles walking past my house. I know Gary still lives in the area, but I can't be sure it's him. I once saw potential Gary Birtles at the train station, but the only person with me was my wife's American cousin. Although he's a fan of British football, Nottingham Forest players of the late 70s, early 80s was a bit beyond him. When I see Gary Birtles on TV, I think it definitely does look like that bloke. I haven't asked the man if he is Gary Birtles, and if he answered me, the only potential answers are yes or no, and I don't have a follow-up to either of these questions. I have asked around, and it does seem increasingly likely that it's him. Yeah. Well, Dan, good luck.
Well, what Dan should do now is say, are you Gary Birtles? And if he says yes, then go, oh, could you recommend a window cleaner?
That's a lovely way to end. That'll do for today. Thank you, Jordan.
Cheers, mate.
Thanks, Barry.
Thanks.
Thanks, Wilson.
Cheers, thank you.
Football Weekly is produced by Silence Gray. Our executive producer is Max Sarnas, and we'll be back on Wednesday.
This is The Guardian.